What's good, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the I'ma Tell Like It TIS podcast with your host, yours truly, Jai Shields. Got a good show here for you on this weekend of February the 20th, the year 2021. I hope wherever you are and however you may be listening to this podcast that you're staying safe and staying warm for the 75% of you of us U.S. citizens out there. That does not include you, Mike and EOC, but nice to have you with us here on this sports talk program here in the middle of February. Got lots to talk about here this week. Of course, the Carson Wentz trade will get us going here at the top. Take a break and get to some tennis, and then we'll close out the show with a little bit of, I got a couple of things to say about the NBA and them having their All-Star game. Believe March 7th or March the 8th, and I'll give you a couple minutes on that. But first things first, the biggest news in sport, and if you didn't hear me break down a Tatis trade, that news broke during Wednesday's episode. So go back, pause this, go back and listen to Wednesday's. I gave you plenty of thoughts on the Tatis extension. If you haven't heard my opinion on the Tatis extension yet, but other than the Tatis extension, the second biggest news in sports that broke this week was the fact that the Philadelphia Eagles traded what was the and what we thought, even with Doug Peterson being fired, what we thought would still be the Eagles franchise quarterback in Carson Wentz. He is now a thing of the past. The Eagles traded him the other, I believe it was Thursday. It was Thursday. Traded him Thursday morning. They traded Carson Wentz to the Indianapolis Colts for a 2021 third round draft pick and a conditional 2022 second round draft pick that could turn into a first round draft pick for the Philadelphia Eagles. Just to give a couple of incentives here, the Eagles received the 85th pick in the draft this year and the conditional second round pick can become a first round pick based on Wentz's playing time with the Colts. So if Wentz plays 75% of the offensive snaps for the Colts, which should be no reason why he wouldn't. It's not like they're going to throw in Jacoby Brissett after they just traded for Wentz. Wentz would have to play 75% of the Colts' offensive snaps for the 2022 conditional pick to be a first-round pick for Philadelphia. Just to give you my thoughts on the trade, from an Indianapolis standpoint, you can't go wrong. Deshaun Watson, it wasn't going to go to Indianapolis. The Texans don't want to cut ties with Deshaun Watson anyway. You better believe that they do not want to end up trading Deshaun Watson to a division rival. So, and the Colts needed a quarterback with Philip Rivers playing the 1 year in 2020 and then retiring, heading out the door. Andrew Luck is not coming through that door again. Peyton Manning is going into the Hall of Fame. So they need a quarterback that's going to fulfill the position for the next five plus years or so. And you look on the market, you know, there's not that many quarterbacks out there to be had. You know, the Colts were a playoff team, so unless somehow Mac Jones or Justin Fields drops all the way down to in the late first round, which I don't see why they would. But if they drop all the way down late first round, I don't think that Fields and Mac Jones of Alabama will be on the board for the Colts to take in this year's upcoming draft. Also, it puts your franchise in a tough position, you know, because they coming off of a season where they made the playoffs and, you know, they have a pretty decent and will be a very competitive football team in 2021, you know, dealing with a rookie quarterback, you know, and trying to build him and mold him into your offensive system and throughout and to get himself used to playing in the NFL. It's a bad mix with that, with a team that made the playoffs last year and are looking to do bigger and better things as far as playing January football is concerned. So and the only quarterback that tickled the Colts fancy was Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz, of course, when Carson Wentz had his better years of his career, was when Frank Reich was his offensive coordinator at Philadelphia. Just to read you his numbers before Frank Reich left. In 2017, we'll just go with that because that is his greatest. That's his best season. That's his best season. That's his best season he's ever had in his career. Was his injury shortened 2017 season. He had a 60% completion percentage, threw for 3,296 yards, 33 touchdown passes, and 7 interceptions. With a QBR, if you're into that, Skip Bayless, 78.5 is his QBR. And that's with Frank Reich at the helm for the Philadelphia Eagles back 3 years ago in 2017. So, and that's been his best season. Now, his 2018 was good. Not as great, but it was good. Had a better completion percentage. Granted, he played the full season. But it's 28, or check that, he didn't play the full season because he got injured, and then Foles came in down the stretch, so I take that back. But he had a better completion percentage in 2018. He started 11 games in 2018 compared to 13 in 2017 when he tore his ACL. 2019, his most recent great season where he actually played the full 16 games, his completion percentage was down from 2018. It was 63.9%, but he threw for over 4,000 passing yards, if you're into that stat, and had 27 touchdowns and 7 interceptions. With a terrible offensive line and having to throw to J.J. Arcega-Whiteside Nelson Aguilar. So, and then in 2020 he just fell off. He fell off a cliff. He had his career worst 57% completion percentage. Didn't throw for over 2,700 passing yards. 16 touchdowns. He hasn't thrown 16 touchdowns since his rookie year in 2016, and a career high to this point, 15 interceptions in this past 2020 season. So whether it was the fact and news that came out over the last couple of days that, you know, he and Doug Peterson legitimately hated each other to the point where they didn't speak to each other for a good 8 to 10 weeks. So whether it's the fact that he didn't like Doug Peterson and that had something to do with it, whether it was the fact that honestly everything came crashing down for the Eagles, Howie Roseman with the poor draft picks, not getting Carson Wentz, a decent offensive line, little to no run game to speak of, wide receivers were trash wide receivers, the point they got to go get washed up DeSean Jackson to see if that helps. Whatever it might be, Carson Wentz, if you watched the many Eagle games, and I did, week one against Washington, Wentz wasn't that amazing. Of course the Bengal game, he did have that nice scramble thinking on his feet, which when he ran in for a touchdown that ended up tying the game up, but in overtime he was pathetic in that overtime period against Cincinnati in September. A few weeks later, was abysmal against Cleveland on the road. So not every Eagle game, but I saw a decent sample size of Carson Wentz and the Philadelphia Eagles over this past football season, and I was not impressed, and Carson Wentz was anything but spectacular. But maybe a change of scenery is good for Carson. You sit back and the big mistake that the Eagles made was, and it just goes to show, you win one Super Bowl and you don't know how to act when they gave Foles and Peterson that statue before the season, before the 2018 season started. They gave him that. They gave Foles and Doug Peterson that Philly statue right outside the stadium, which, Nick Foles, who, give him all the credit in the world, he had one of the more improbable, more magical playoff runs in the history of the National Football League, but he's a journeyman, he isn't the Eagles franchise quarterback. Carson Wentz, everybody knew that at the time that Carson Wentz was going to be their franchise quarterback. They all knew that Carson Wentz played as big a part of that 2017 championship as much as Nick Foles, because Carson Wentz played those 13 games that had the Eagles. That game that he tore his ACL is when they beat the Rams in Los Angeles, is the game where the Eagles won the division and were primed to lock up the top two seeds in the NFC playoffs that year. But that was their first mistake, because from Carson Wentz's perspective, just thinking in retrospect, I know hindsight's 2020, but looking in retrospect, it's like, you're a franchise quarterback, you're a guy, Carson, you're the guy. And every single day Carson Wentz rolls into Lincoln Financial Field, he sees and or hears about or looks, or that statue is always in the back of his mind, knowing that he wasn't the guy that delivered his team their first Super Bowl championship in the history of the franchise. It was Nick Foles. So I can understand how, and that falls on the Eagles. The time to give Peterson and Nick Foles a statue is in 2027 or 2037, not 2018, 1 year after you won the whole thing. When you have a young at the time 25, 26 year old quarterback that's supposed to be your franchise and had an unfortunate injury, where if he hadn't gotten injured, I have to go back and like look and see where the NFL, where like the state of the teams were, right around the time that right around the time Wentz got injured. But it was for sure that Wentz was going to get the MVP in 2017, not Brady. And the Eagles, I have to go back and look and see where the state of the teams were at the time of Wentz's injury. But you could have made an argument that the Eagles would have won the Super Bowl anyway if Wentz hadn't have gotten hurt. From Wentz's perspective, I'd imagine it's the catch the franchise and, talking out of both sides of their mouths and engaging in hypocrisy, saying you're a franchise guy, yet you have to walk past or drive past, I don't know where the statue is as far as the complex of Lincoln Financial Field is concerned, the park line on the concourse, all this, but I would imagine he would have felt a certain way. And truth be told, I can't blame him. I cannot blame him one bit for jealousy, envy. I don't blame him. And that's the part where the Eagles have to take a hit, is because they should know. It's just not the time and the place to do it. The banner one thing, the rings one thing. I get that. If Nick Foles retires, or as soon as Nick Foles leaves the Eagles, you want to retire as number nine. Fine, whatever. But the time that wasn't the time, and shame on me for not thinking about this sooner. It's all of a sudden now that Wentz is gone and you found out that he and Peterson really couldn't stand each other. Now it's, putting the pieces of the puzzle together, and you sit back and, I know hindsight again is 2020, but you realize that the Eagles made a huge mistake putting up that statue you know, when they did. You know, the time for that statue is not for, you know, when Wentz comes back off of the ACL injury. You know, that's not the time and place for you to have a statue of your head coach who's supposed to be joined at the hip with Wentz and his replacement that ended up doing what no Eagle quarterback had done up until that point, and that's delivered the Eagles a Super Bowl championship. You know, so again, the time to unveil that statue is in 6 years. Come the 10-year reunion when Ertz and Brandon Graham and Torrey Smith and Jason Kelce and Doug Peterson and Frank Reich and Foles all come back and have a big old kumbaya at Lincoln Financial, sometime in September in the middle or smack dab in the middle of the season. That's the time for you to unveil a statue. You know, look, this, you know, it was a famous play. It was one of the greatest trick plays in the history of the Super Bowl. That was the time to do it, not then. Again, I didn't address it then. I should have, but looking back in retrospect, That's where the Eagles screwed up from themselves from the very beginning, is when they unveiled that statue after their Super Bowl championship in 2017. But Wentz, you know, he had a very spotty 2016 year. I think that was Peterson's first year there, if I'm not mistaken. He wasn't great. 2017, he had the MVP caliber season. 2018, didn't play as much, but still a very solid quarterback. 69% completion percentage, threw for over 3,000 yards, 21 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. Very, very good. 2019 was just as impressive as 2017 season, based on the fact that his offensive line was a bunch of walking turnstiles. And he literally had no help, and he still found a way to throw for over 4,000 passing yards, which is a career high, and nearly threw for 30 touchdowns and kept his interceptions at 7, which is just absolutely remarkable on the part of Carson Wentz. And in 2020, you know, the wheels fell off. Now, granted, he doesn't have wide receivers, running game's lackluster, and his offensive line is bad, but when it comes to assessing Wentz, you can't, you know, rave about how great of a 2019 season, especially down the stretch when he helped the Eagles get into the playoff. You can't go nuts about that and then all of a sudden say, well, he had a bad 2020 season because look at his offensive line, his receivers this, receivers that. I was like, there was little to no roster. They used a draft pick on Jalen Hurts, for crying out loud. The roster change from the 2019 team from the 2020 team wasn't that much different as far as their offensive starters are concerned. So if he can throw for over 4,000 passing yards in 2019 and throw for 27 touchdowns in 2019 with for the most part the same group of receivers, and the receivers, you know, and remember, the in 2019 the Eagles, they were on their practice squad as far as their wide receiving core is concerned, and they didn't have to deal with injuries that much in 2020, but it's still, again, the same similar roster, and he goes from throwing 7 interceptions to 15, and his touchdown passes dropped from 27 to 16, and I understand it, you know, he got benched and didn't play the whole year, but he couldn't even muster the throw for 2,700 passing yards. So that would be concerning if I was a member of the Indianapolis Colts or a Colts fan or someone within the Colts organization, because you hope that the 2020 season that he had isn't the beginning of where Carson Wentz's career just nosedives and he just becomes a straight up scrub of a quarterback. What you do hope, if you're a Colts fan, is that his relationship with Frank Reich, his old offensive coordinator in Philly, they reunite, they get things back on track to the way things were in Philadelphia, they get things back on track, and Carson Wentz gets back to throwing for over 300 3,000 passing yards, gets his completion percentage to up above 60%, and gets back to throwing double-digit touchdowns and single-digit interceptions. You know, starts throwing touchdowns in the 20s and in the 30s, and keeps his interceptions at seven or less. That's what you do hope if you're a Colts fan. You Jonathan Taylor, one of the best running backs in all of football, you'll be all right. Your defense is a force to be reckoned with, and all you gotta do is just hope that Wentz and Reich get back to where they were as far as the chemistry between the two of them are concerned, like it was back in Philadelphia. That's what you hope. You're a Colts fan, go and watch 2017. I don't think Reich was the coach in 2018, if I'm not mistaken. I don't think he was. But go back, if you're a Colts fan, go back and watch Carson Wentz 2017 highlights. If you're a Colts fan, if you get that version of Carson Wentz, you're in pretty good shape. And expect to be, again, right there with the Tennessee Titans as far as competing for the AFC South division title. But, you know, that's how I look at it from a Colts standpoint. From an Eagles standpoint, Eagles wanted a king's ransom for Wentz. They obviously weren't going to get it because of two reasons. Wentz is injury prone, and he had an abysmal 2020 campaign, like I previously mentioned. So they weren't going to get a king's ransom for him. I was shocked to find out that Wentz wanted out, even though his arch nemesis, Doug Peterson, was out the door. I mean, when Doug Peterson got fired, I was like, well, they don't want to eat all this money in dead cap with Wentz, and they still want Wentz to be the franchise guy. So, and he obviously, you know, doesn't get along real well and has issues with Doug Peterson. So they threw Doug Peterson out to the Wolves to save Carson Wentz. But it turns out that wasn't the case. I guess Wentz wasn't sold on that Nick Sirianni, whatever his name is. That press conference from late January, where he stumbled and bumbled and stuttered and ad-libbed his way throughout his opening press conference. If you remember that, I believe that was the Friday in between championship weekend and Super Bowl weekend. January 27th or 28th or 29th, I forget, but I guess he wasn't impressed with that guy, with that press conference. Took 5 seconds to look at it and says, I gotta get the hell out of here. This guy is going to work out too well. So I guess that's what happened. He requested a trade. Eagles wanted a king's ransom. They didn't get it. But Wentz gets his wish, gets out of Philadelphia, which I think Wentz needs. I wouldn't take it real well, the fact that a franchise saying, you're my franchise, you're our franchise quarterback, yet they give me no help with the draft, scrub wide receivers, that not to mention always injury prone, offensive line isn't that great, can't run the football real well, so you don't provide me help as far as giving me a decent set of guys around me for me to work with. And then again, it's Nick Foles everywhere I go. So I totally get why Wentz, you know, would need a change of scenery and would need to get out of the confines of the silly of the city, excuse me, of Philadelphia. I thought that he was going to be with the Eagles long term, especially after Peterson got fired, but it wasn't the case. Eagles get stock up on draft picks. Jalen Hurts is going to be their guy, whether or not Hurts will be the Eagles franchise quarterback to give them a decade or decade plus of solid quarterback play remains to be seen. But, you know, it hurts has Nate Sudfeld, you know, looks over shoulder. He's looking at Nate Sudfeld. So it's all on him now. I would imagine he is now the Philadelphia Eagles starting quarterback from here on out. The Colts, they get a franchise quarterback. He's only played a couple of seasons. He's only played a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 seasons. So he still would have, you know, unless he stays off of IR, I would imagine he has about a dozen or so seasons left in him. Change of scenery would and should be good for Carson Wentz. Gets reunited with his old coach and Frank Reich, and the Colts should be in pretty good shape for not just the 2021 season, but for football seasons headed down the road. And the Eagles have to eat the salary of Wentz, which you know they didn't want to do, but it just goes to show you how Wentz really wanted no parts of the Philadelphia Eagles any further, even with Doug Peterson being out of there. And I guess it was no lie after the Week 17 debacle where the locker room was straight up and down fractured. And I mean, and you want to talk about a team, I mean, they won the Super Bowl, and yes, they made the playoffs in 2018 and 2019, but My goodness gracious! I mean, Philadelphia. You want to talk about the rise and fall of the Eagles? You know, it takes them forever to win the Super Bowl. They won the Super Bowl. They make the playoffs. They win a playoff game. You know, if Alshon Jeffrey catches the ball that hits him right in his mitts, they end up going to the NFC Championship game again. And then they make the playoffs in 2019. And Carson Wentz with the concussion given to him by Jadeveon Clowney of the Seahawks, and he, you know, doesn't even play a quarter, and it's Josh McCown in the quarterback. But, you know, this is a team that is nosediving right back to where they came from, and that is the basement and the sewage banks of the National Football League. Which is crazy considering where this franchise was a few seasons ago, beating Brady, beating the greatest head coach and quarterback combo in the history of National Football League, you know, ending that long drought of, you know, and finally winning a Super Bowl after all those years where Andy Reid, took them just far enough for them not to finally reach the promised land. And all of a sudden, who they thought was their franchise quarterback is gone. Their head coach, who won them a Super Bowl, is gone. And essentially that 2017 group is going to be no one left. And you're gonna look at the rosters, and there's not gonna be anyone left from the 2017 team, which was again a short 3 seasons ago, which is crazy. But that is where you are and where you stand as far as the Carson Wentz and Indianapolis Colts trade is concerned. Take a break, get to some tennis. Gave you my thoughts on Carson Wentz. Now it's time for me to talk Serena. Coming up right after this. Welcome back to the I'ma Tell Like It Is podcast. Switching gears now from football to tennis. What? Yeah, tennis. Unless you want to hear me break down me playing Madden against one of my old buddies. I don't know. But unless you want this podcast to be like, you know, a half hour long, I got to come up with something. And it's Chris Root, as my man Chris Mantle Russo, I say, you got to be versatile, Jai. You got to be versatile. As an aspiring sports talk show host, you have to be versatile. You do the football when you have to, but don't rely on the football. It's a parachute for sports talk show hosts. Okay, and you do too much football. You got many a football. Don't think too much football. Show a little bit, the versatility in the mix, okay? Do a little tennis, do a little golf, do a little something on Crosby, Stills, and Nash. Dog, I'm not doing Crosby, Stills, and Nash, but you gotta do it, Jai. You gotta learn something. Expand your horizons. Wait, please. So he says you got to be versatile. I am versatile. Discussed the Masters back in November and in April's past. Of course, I do the three sports that everyone loves: baseball, football, basketball. And then, of course, when it's what I consider one of this week's big stories in sports with Serena Williams and the tennis, you got to address that. Which I watched that tennis match at 10 o'clock on Wednesday night. It didn't keep me long, that's for sure. About an hour and 15 minutes, I think that's how long it was, when Serena got knocked out by nemesis Naomi. Oh, I wouldn't say nemesis, but got knocked out by a young challenger, Naomi Osaka, who's the third seed in this tournament. Naomi beat her 6-3, 6-4 in straight sets. A highly anticipated tennis match. Really, honestly, the biggest, you know, I may be stretching it and maybe going a little overboard with this, but from what I saw via social media, take it for what it's worth, that this was one of the most highly anticipated matchups or highly anticipated matches / games in sports since the Super Bowl. And Serena lost in straight sets. And if you go and look, Naomi is now 3-2 against Serena in her young career. In 2018, they played each other in 2018 twice. Osaka won both times. The second time in 2018, of course, that aforementioned memorable, infamous 2018 U.S. Open women's singles championship, where Serena went nuts. And if you go back and recall one of the first few episodes of this podcast, I went on here and screamed and yelled about that. They played each other in 2019. Serena got the best of Naomi on that one. And then when they played each other in 2021, I can go back and get you that for you right quick, just to make sure. Just to be accurate here, when they played each other, it has to be in 2020, because I'm looking on a thing, they must have got that wrong. SB Nation must have got that wrong. When they played each other in 20, it must not be on the sheet, but according to SB Nation, they've played each other twice in 2021. Serena won the first time. And Naomi got her, of course, on Wednesday. As far as 2021 for Serena is concerned, she got knocked out once again in straight sets. And, you know, tennis experts, which is not me, that's the Chris Russos of the world, the Patrick McEnroes, the John McEnroes, those guys. They thought that this is what they have said, and I'll take their word for it because they pay attention to tennis on a day in day out basis more than I do. But from what I heard is that Serena was playing absolutely phenomenal throughout this tournament. You know, she took care of business in the first and second round, Serena beating her opponents in straight sets each. Got worked a little bit, had to go three sets in the third and fourth rounds, beat Halep 6-3 twice, the back-to-back straight sets, beat Simona Halep in the quarterfinals, and from what I got was that Serena, you know, the energy was there, she was into it. You know, it was like a reset button, you know, dealing with the pandemic and not playing for such a long time, and just learning how to appreciate and seize and quote unquote smell the roses per se, and just enjoy being there, and it showed out throughout her play. And then on Wednesday night, I mean, Serena had a 2-0 lead in the first set, was absolutely dealing, and had Osaka off her game. You know, double faults. So Osaka hitting the ball into the net. I mean, she was just, I know they said it was nerves over the broadcast. I don't know if it was nerves or it was just the fact that, you know, she wasn't ready yet, and Serena was just firing all cylinders. I don't know what it was, but Osaka came back down from 2-0 in the first set, came on and came back, and of course took care of business, won 6-3. 6-4, when it being Serena in straight sets back to back. But it's crazy, you know, because Serena looked like that this was going to be her match to win. Okay, her serve was on point, she's been doing for the better part of 25 years now. She's been on the pro circuit, and that's overpowering her opponent. Being 39 years of age, it looks like that might unless she catches a break, you know, lightning, she catches lightning in a bottle or changes the way she plays, which I don't expect her to. It looks like that these young tennis players like Osaka that she's ran into on a more recent basis, that they know how to beat her. And it's based on pure athleticism and just the fact that they're younger, which if you go back and look at Serena's early part of her career, she was doing that with the 37, 38, 39 year olds back when she was playing back, you know, over 20 years ago. So you kind of get it's a circle of quote unquote sports career, sports life. You know, when you come in, new kid on the block, you're dominating everyone. You can do no wrong. Your athleticism is flying off the charts. You're running back and forth across the court. Your forehand, your backhand's working. Your serve is impeccable. Your serve can't do no wrong. Then all of a sudden, once you get past, you know, 35, and Serena, of course, having a kid and everything else, you know, eventually your physicality and your athleticism isn't what you were at 29, 19 years of age, heading in here at 39. So, and I just, you know, and from what I heard, she was absolutely wheeling and dealing throughout this entire tournament and was fantastic taking the first two sets of the match. And then the third set came along and she flat out hit the wall. And you could just see that all the momentum, Osaka got herself together, she calmed down, she relaxed, started playing her game, playing the way she knows how to win tennis matches, and the momentum totally shifted from Serena to Naomi Osaka, and before you know it, Serena is out of there in 75 minutes. Goodbye, good night, and see you tomorrow. So, I mean, and then she puts her hand on her heart and waves goodbye to the crowd. I think that was more or less of the fact that, you know, it was the first time, you know, being at the Australian Open and having fans in the stands. So I wouldn't read too much into that myself. And she got emotional and started breaking down, crying at the end of her press conference and ended that short. So maybe she realizes that the writing is on the wall and that she doesn't have too many opportunities left. Maybe she realizes that she might not compete in another Australian Open again for the rest of her career. Maybe she realizes that retirement is knocking on the doorstep. U.S. Open is her last Grand Slam tournament before she says goodnight. Or maybe it's just the fact that, hey, I'm 39 years of age. You know, I'm not getting any younger. There's going to be a lot more younger and more athletic and just different and just, you know, you're going to have put it in football terms, the Joe Burrows, the Herberts, the Tuas, the Deshaun Watsons, the soon to be Trevor Lawrences. Those are the new kids on the block. And they are going to be able to do things and be able to play the quarterback position in the NFL the way that the older guys, the Ben Roethlisbergers, the now retired Philip Rivers, the soon to be retired Drew Brees, they can't play the way Herbert and Burrow play the game now as young bucks, as rookies. Those guys are, you know, knocking on, if not in Breeze's case, past 40 years of age, been in the league for over 15 plus years. Their time is past. And maybe Serena, maybe the reason why she broke down, again, I'm not sure. I'm reading off of body language and trying to put the pieces together. But it looks like to me, either Serena sees that the writing is on the wall and that she is, and that she realizes that more of her tennis career is behind her than ahead of her, or she realizes that she's going to go as long as she possibly can, but maybe those were tears of frustration that, you know, thought, man, I was really rolling and going and really playing well throughout this tournament. And for me to have a 2-0 lead and then blow it like that and losing straight sets like that, you know, to an opponent, to a young opponent that looks up to me and that, you know, and grew up watching me play on TV, maybe, you know, maybe it was a sharp piece of humble pie for her. Maybe that's why she broke down. It just, you know, tears out of just frustration. Maybe she knows, you know, a la Brady, she's going to, now I doubt it, but, you know, has that Brady mindset where, you know, I'm going to play till 45 years of age or whatever. Maybe it was that. It was just tears of frustration. Like, damn, man, I thought that was my opportunity. Or she sees the writing on the wall and realizes that the opportunities for her to catch Margaret Court at 24 Grand Slam titles is hanging in the balance, and she doesn't have that much time left if she wants to accomplish that feat. Either or. That's how I looked at it. But had a 2-0 lead and flushed it down the toilet. And you know, opportunity, it's that window for Serena, it's getting that window is nearing its way shut. And I'm a Serena fan and big fan of what she's done in tennis, not just for tennis but outside of the sport of tennis. And nothing would make me happier than to see her get that 24th major, but that window of opportunity is getting slimmer and slimmer and slimmer by the Grand Slams she's continued to lose. She has not won a Grand Slam since that Australian Open where she was pregnant with her daughter. Her daughter, I think, is 2 going on 3, if I'm not mistaken. So it's been a little while. I understand the pandemic and everything else, but her window of opportunity is getting slimmer and slimmer by the tournament and by the year. Congrats to Naomi Osaka beating Jennifer Brady in straight sets earlier on Saturday morning to win the 2021 Australian Open's women's singles title. She is now 4-0 in Grand Slams, undefeated up until this point. Congrats to her. Shout out to her. Give you my thoughts on the NBA All-Star Game, which I think is just an absolute money grab, you know, more than anything else. But I'll give my in-depth thoughts on that coming up right after this. Welcome back to the I'ma Tell Like a T.I.S. podcast. 2021 NBA All-Star Game is going to take place. I know why, but I don't know why at the same time. Going to take place March 7th, 2021. And I know I'm late to the party with this because there was a huge hubbubaloo with the NBA players constituency, you know, during the back end of the NFL playoffs and during the Super Bowl, so I didn't have time to address it then. And then, of course, Russell Wilson and Deshaun Watson and Carson Wentz and Tatis and then Marty Schottenheimer passed away. So I haven't had a chance to address it, but I will here in this last segment for a few minutes. I know why the NBA is having an All-Star game, because of the money. Because if they don't have that All-Star game, they gotta write a check to TNT, which is why they moved the game from Indianapolis. It has nothing to do with the fact that they're having March Madness. The NBA All-Star game is March 7th, and the first weekend of the NCAA tournament doesn't take place until the weekend of March 13th and 14th, if I have that correctly. So the idea that we had to move from Indianapolis because of the NCAA tournament's nonsense. The reason why that game is being played in the city of Atlanta is because TNT is doing the game, and rather than have the Inside the NBA crew along with the behind the scenes people of Turner Sports and Kevin Harlan and Reggie Miller and Chris Webber and Marv Albert, you know, fly essentially separate planes and be quarantined in a hotel room for 2 weeks, you know, tested on the spot of every second of every day. They're better off just having a game in Atlanta, where they don't have to get on a plane, go through airports, go through TSA, and deal with anything of that. So rather than Ernie and the fellas going to the TNT studios, they just head to State Farm Arena, stay distance, and wear a mask when they're not on camera and everything else. Same thing. I don't know if they're going to have people there on location or not, but if they are, it's just simple. So they have everyone there in one location, because TNT, the Warner Media/Turner Media Studios are down in Atlanta, Georgia. Cartoon Network, TNT, TBS, CNN, they're all down there. The NBA TV, they're all down in Atlanta, Georgia. So rather than have it, and it's funny because Shaq brought that up to Kenny. They got into a little, a disagreement in Barkley with Happy Birthday to Chuck, by the way. I believe he turns 58. Today here on Saturday, February 20th, and Chuck was telling Kenny the Jet that the reason why they have the game in Atlanta is because it's easier for Turner Sports to do the game, because rather than them just going to the studios, they just go to the State Farm Arena and not have to worry about getting on planes and having to quarantine in separate hotels. You know, there's a lot of risk you take when you travel. There's a lot of risk you take, and the more susceptible you are to catching COVID if you change cities rather than just being in the one city in the same central location without them having to take, 2 weeks off of time for, getting the COVID, doing rapid COVID testing and quarantining and all that sort of stuff is concerned. But I know why the NBA is doing it, because of money, because it don't want to give the check back to TNT, but they shouldn't have it. LeBron especially, one of the most shortest off seasons in recent memory, especially for guys like LeBron and players that were, and the guys that were on the Miami Heat. Matter of fact, let me give you, for guys like LeBron James, the reserves will be announced on Monday, but just, for LeBron James, because out of the starters, he's the one that's had the shortest offseason out of all the starters that have been announced. It's not fair to him. He busts behind to compete and win a championship. He wins a championship mid-October. He gets one whole month off, and that's the month of November. Gets the back end of October, and gets the front end, and gets about two-thirds of December, and then he has to go right back out there and compete in a new NBA regular season. So I totally understand his frustration. He went alongside it. I'm pretty sure you've heard it already, but how LeBron is not a fan of it, and I don't blame him. And all the NBA players have every single right to get on their soapbox and yell and scream about why this is a joke and why they don't need nor are not in favor of an NBA All-Star game, because they don't need it. The game is a dud. I don't care that they got that weird, funky scoring system I can't get into. The game's not good. They play no defense. I mean, it's right there with the NFL as one of the worst All-Star games. The worst All-Star games of all the major sports. The only thing you're into is the 3-point and the slam dunk, and they can't even do that properly. The 3-point, all right, fine, but the slam dunk, no big names. The big name guys rarely compete in it anymore. It's the new guys, the one and done rookies, and the guys coming out of the G League that happened to catch the league's attention by a couple of dunks, and they participate in the slam dunk contest. And then when they have the dunk contest, you know, a la Dwayne Wade with that asinine 9 rating in last year's contest, the guy that wins the dunk contest doesn't deserve the win. And the guy that deserves the win ends up getting screwed by the judges. So they can't even do the slam dunk contest properly. And rather than the dunk contest this year being the Saturday night before the All-Star game, they have the skills challenge and the 3-point the Saturday night before. But this year they're going to have the dunk contest during halftime, which is a little odd. So, and then not to mention, you know, the NBA that made sure that they were front and center and essentially made major headlines and got pats on the back and was praised as all get up. What a job with the bubble. What an idea with the bubble. Oh my God. You know, they were getting raved about from every media company, from everybody. I mean, it was just lovely. Oh, look at the NBA. Oh my goodness, the bubble. What a fantastic job. And then they went from innovator to now it's like they don't know what they're doing. They got COVID cases popping up all over the place. Games getting postponed and canceled left and right. You know, they had Kevin Durant. They had, again, a la Justin Turner in game six of the World Series, you know, they have an inconclusive COVID test, but for whatever the reason, he's allowed to start. And then when they finally get word that the COVID test was positive, now you got to pull him out, but the game is still able to be played with all the players, you know, that's been around him and been in close contact with said infected player. And then to have an NBA All-Star game is going to be many a parties. Look it up. There's going to be many of NBA All-Star weekend block parties down in Atlanta, Georgia. You know, regardless, I don't care how many times the Atlanta mayor has to say, look, don't come down here. Don't come, you know, little to no people come to this game. Don't party. People are going to do whatever they want to do. And it's all because the NBA decided, well, if they're having an All-Star game, we're going to sit up here and party it up and dance and drink the night away till 3 o'clock in the morning. So it's just going to be a major mess. There's going to be infections and people getting sick, popping up all over the place. If you know any of these NBA players, they can't sit still in a hotel room for 72 hours. They got to get up and do something. Go to the strip club. Go to a restaurant, go out on a date, you know, fornicate with a few girls in a hotel room. They can't just sit still and not do anything unless it's showing up to the arena and playing basketball. For the most part, a lot of these guys, they got the I can't help it. So it's just going to be a complete mess. And the players want no parts of it. If LeBron, who's the poster boy of the sport, and essentially, even though he isn't the players union president, the players union players representative president, Chris Paul, is, but LeBron James, he speaks for the players for the most part. If he says he doesn't like it and he can't stand it, that's all you need to know. Poster boy of the league, and he's the face, quote unquote, of the NBA Players Association. So it's just, you know, the players, and he's not the only one. Players want no parts of it whatsoever. You know, what's the point, you know? Not to mention the NBA also looks bad, because rather than them saying prior to the season, we'll leave the idea of us having an All-Star game up in the air, yet to be determined. There wasn't supposed to be an all-time All-Star game this year. It's supposed to be an All-Star break, you know, a couple of day periods where these guys don't play basketball. They have like a 4 to 5 day break, but there wasn't supposed to be an All-Star game or an All-Star weekend. And then when the NBA, you know, I guess looked at their bottom line and opened up their portfolio, they realized that if we don't have an All-Star game, we owe TNT X amount of dollars, and God forbid we cough up a couple million, if not a couple, I think it's a couple million dollars to TNT, you know, just for one season. You don't have to have that stupid All-Star game. God forbid we do that. No, screw it. We all gotta, you know, we'll fly each and every player individually on private jets to get them to make sure that they play in this game. So it's just a complete mess. I understand why they're doing it. They need the money, you know, and they don't want to give the money back to TNT, God forbid. But it's not only is it a bad look, it's just totally unnecessary. You know, and then God forbid, you know, we find out a week and a half, 2 weeks later, that, you know, that 75% of the players that are on the two rosters, not to mention maybe two referees and members of somebody's training staff, ends up getting sick, and it essentially puts the NBA on pause for 2 weeks. Because they're not careful, that could happen at the drop of a hat, and that's the last thing the NBA needs and wants, especially as we're creeping closer and closer to March and into March Madness, where if there's any time of the month where the NBA outside of December and January with football, if there's a third month where the NBA takes a back seat to another sport, it's the month of March, where March Madness and the NCAA tournament, that form of competitive basketball becomes primary in every sports fan's minds, and the NBA moves to the back seat. And that's the last thing the NBA needs. When we're about to tip off March Madness, the NBA has to take a 2 week hiatus, because about 95% of their NBA, that's players, coaches, and et cetera, you know, media personnel that showed up to Atlanta at State Farm Arena is sick with COVID, is downtrodden and sick with COVID. That's the last thing they want, and that's the last thing they need. The players don't like it. The players are against it. And me personally, I can do without the NBA All-Star game. The only time I remember actually watching the NBA All-Star game from start to finish, for the most part, I think it was either the 19 All-Star game or the 18, whatever was the All-Star game that took place in LA where Fergie butchered the national anthem. Me and my family literally wasted 3 hours of our lives sitting down and watching that debacle. But no one gives a crap about the NBA All-Star game, and no one can tell you about NBA All-Star game MVP awards, you know, because we got to see LeBron or Luka or anybody else, or Giannis or Kyrie Irving or Durant win MVP, Steph Curry, Kawhi Leonard, they are complete waste of time. And the slam dunk is interesting, but it's happening during halftime of the game. They don't get any A-list superstars to compete in it anymore, and they screw it up because they couldn't grade a kindergarten pop quiz, and they award the slam dunk champion to the wrong guy, a la last year with Dwayne Wade with the infamous 9 score. So it's a waste of time, and again, they're having it because the NBA doesn't want to have to write back a check to TNT, and the only reason why that game is taking place in Atlanta is because they don't want a bunch of a bunch of Turner Sports and members of the NBA on TNT crew having to fly back and forth from Indianapolis to and from back and forth to Indianapolis and Atlanta, and have to worry about someone running into the wrong person or touching the wrong thing and coming in contact with the wrong thing and people getting sick. To the point where they have to, especially when they're about to have the NCAA tournament, and since 2011, the NCAA tournament is a joint broadcast production between CBS Sports and Turner Sports, and the last thing they need is Ernie Shack and Kenny and one of their producers there getting sick because of COVID because they went to the NBA All-Star game up in Indianapolis when they're going to need them a week and a half later come NCAA tournament time. Not to mention, I don't think Turner would like to pay for essentially a whole month's work of hotel fees and traveling fees, because if they're going to go up there to Indianapolis for the All-Star game, they might as well stay there the entire month of March, because the NCAA tournament is going to be like the NBA was back in the summer and fall. They're going to have essentially a little bubble in Indianapolis. So I'm pretty sure TNT doesn't want to have to pay for, Charles Barkley's 11:30 gin and tonic for every Saturday night. But I won't be into it myself, to be quite honest with you. They shouldn't have an NBA All-Star game, but they are because the NBA wants the money. And again, I do not blame not one NBA player getting on their soapbox and getting on their platform, voicing their opinion, saying how they don't like the fact that there's going to be an All-Star game. Because quite frankly, I don't blame them, especially LeBron, who had the shortest offseason out of all of them. And of course, he made it, of course, as a starter. But you think LeBron wants to sit up here and hop on a plane? Matter of fact, let me go see where the Lakers play. The Lakers' last game of the first half. And you think LeBron? I understand LeBron's flying private, and he can afford it and everything. It's not about the fact of just being that he can afford it. It's just, does LeBron feel like doing it? Which obviously he doesn't feel like doing. March the 3rd is as furthest as the NBA schedule get. So, and that's at Sacramento. I understand the private jet, but you think LeBron, after he's essentially busted his ass since mid-late July with about a month and a half, 2 months of a break, you think LeBron wants to hop on a plane from Sacramento and fly cross country down to Atlanta to compete in some dopey All-Star game that nobody in America gives a crap about? The answer, obviously, because it came from the horse's mouth. The answer is obviously a big fat no. So that's where I stand as far as the NBA All-Star game is concerned. But I had to get that out there and off my chest. I haven't had time to address it, and I finally got around to it, and there's my thoughts on it. But that's your show, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for listening. If you're new to the program and you enjoyed what you heard, please subscribe. Follow your boy on Twitter and Instagram at TheJShield. Follow the show on Instagram at Amatella_podcast and the show on Twitter @Amatella_ITIS. It's your boy Josh Shields. Stay safe and healthy, ladies and gentlemen. Talk to you Wednesday. See ya.